February, Year of God, 894. 1. Duke of Colman's Office, City of Ithria, Gulf of Jaras, Desnarian Empire.
Damnation!
Divan Berat, the Duke of Colman and Emperor Maris IV's senior counselor for the Imperial Desnarian Navy, balled the sheet of paper into a crushed wad and hurled it at the trash can. The improvised projectile's aerodynamic qualities left a great deal to be desired, and it landed on his office carpet, bounced twice, and sailed under a bookcase.
Shit,
the Duke muttered in disgust, then slumped back in the chair behind his desk and glowered at the man sitting in the chair facing it. His guest, Sir Erwin Halter, Baron Jaras, was a short, compactly built man, brown hair going salt-and-pepper gray at the temples. A study in physical contrast with the taller, silver-haired Coleman, he had a full beard rather than the Duke's neatly groomed mustache. He was also more than 10 years younger, with a much more weathered-looking complexion. And, not to his particular comfort at the moment, he was Admiral General of the Imperial Desnarian Navy. It was a magnificent-sounding title. Unfortunately, it was also an office with which no Desnarian had any previous experience, since there'd never before been any need for it. The Desnarian Navy had never been particularly imperial before the recent unpleasantness between the Kingdom of Karras and the Knights of the Temple Lands. In fact, it had never boasted more than 40 ships at its largest. Worse, that somewhat less than towering level of power had been attained almost 70 years before. The Navy's strength as of the Battle of Darko Sound had been only 12 ships, and all of them had been purchased somewhere else rather than built in any Desnarian shipyard. Despite the magnificent harbors of the Gulf of Jaras, Desnair had never been a maritime power, especially over the past century and a half or so of its competition with the equally land-oriented Republic of Sidarmark. Baron Jaras, however, was something of an oddity for a Desnarian noble. He'd served, adequately, if not outstandingly, in the Imperial Army, as any senior aristocrat was expected to do. But his family had been far more active in trade than most well-born Desnarians. In fact, they'd been even more active than they'd been prepared to admit to most of their noble relatives and peers. Jaras, in fact, had controlled the largest merchant house in the entire Desnarian Empire, and, however disreputable it might have been for a proper nobleman, that merchant house had owned a fleet of no less than 31 trading galleons, which was how he had come to find himself tapped to command Emperor Maris's newborn navy. Of course, he thought now from behind a carefully expressionless face, it would help if I'd ever commanded a naval warship before I found myself commanding the entire damned navy. Or, for that matter, if there were a single Desnarian who had a clue how to organize a navy.
His Majesty isn't going to be happy about this, Erwin, Coleman said finally in a calmer tone.
And Jaras reflected with monumental understatement.
I know, the Baron said out loud.
Despite the vast gulf between their titles, Jaras, even though a mere baron, was very nearly as wealthy as Coleman. He was also married to Coleman's first cousin, a combination which, thankfully, made it possible for him to speak frankly, which he now proceeded to do.
On the other hand, he continued, I can hardly say I'm surprised.
He shrugged.
Wellar was a good man, but he didn't have any more experience commanding a galleon than any of the rest of our senior officers.
Coleman snorted. He couldn't disagree with that particular statement, although he could have added that none of their senior officers had any particular experience commanding galleys either. Which, given the apparent differences between galleys and galleons, might not necessarily be a bad thing. He only wished that he, as the Imperial Counselor, directly charged with building and running the Emperor's new navy, had some idea of exactly what those differences were.
"That may be true," the Duke said now. "But when His Majesty gets his copy of that..."
He jabbed an index finger in the direction of the vanished ball of paper.
"He's going to hit the roof, and you know it. Worse, Bishop Executor Martin's going to do the same thing."
"I do know it," Jarrus agreed, "but frankly, they should have seen this, or something like it, coming, when they decided to send the tithe by sea."
He shrugged unhappily.
"I've had enough experience with what happened to my own merchant galleons to know what Carizian privateers and naval cruisers can do."
"But according to that," Coleman's fingers stabbed the air again, "one of their galleons just beat the shit out of two of ours, and ours were under command of what you yourself just described as a good man. In fact, one of our better men."
"It's what I've been trying to explain from the beginning, Divan," Jarrus said. "Sea battles aren't like land battles, and we just aren't trained for them. By the time a Desnarian nobleman's 18, he has at least some notion about how to lead a cavalry charge, and the army has a well-developed organization with at least some experience in how to supply cavalry and infantry in the field. We know how long it's going to take to get from point A to point B, how many miles we can expect an army to advance over what sort of roads and in what kind of weather, how many horseshoes and nails we're going to need, what kind of wagons, how many farriers and blacksmiths. We can make plans based on all of that, but how many casks of powder does a galleon need? How many spare cordage and canvas and spars? For that matter, how long will it take a galleon to sail from Gaera to Ithria? Well, that depends. It depends on how fast it is, how skilled its captain is, what the weather's like, all sorts of things none of His Majesty's officers really have any experience at all with.